This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This is Issues 2018. I'm Steve McIntosh, and our guest is Wichita Fire Chief Tammy Snow. Welcome to Issues 2018, Chief.
Well, thank you very much for having me this morning,
Steve. And when was your appointment as Chief?
I was actually appointed in November of 2017, and I believe the correct date was November 17th.
Didn't you serve as interim for a while, though?
Yes, I did. I served since July of 2017.
Well, you know, I've been looking at the web page and different things, and it doesn't have Tammy Snow. It has Elizabeth Snow. So which would you rather me address you as?
It doesn't matter. I'll tell you the story behind that. My official name is Elizabeth Catherine. And my mother named me after my two grandmothers. I was the firstborn in my family. When I was born, my dad wanted to name me Tamara Marie. And so when I was born, they could never decide. My dad stepped out to get a cup of coffee. The doctor walked in, provided my mother with the birth certificate, so she named me Elizabeth Catherine. And my dad has called me Tammy ever since.
All right. Well, that's
compromise.
Kind of a cruel hoax there on your dad. Well, let's talk about your background a little bit. Where are you from, actually? You're from here in town?
No, I am not. My father was in the service in the military, and so we moved around about every year and a half and 2 years. We call home back east in Pennsylvania because that's where my parents' hometown is. They're from a small borough back in Pennsylvania. But I have lived just about across the United States in about every single state in the United States. And so my dad retired here from McConnell Air Force Base, and so I've stayed here.
You know, I hear that a lot over the years, people doing that and raising their families here after they retire from the military. Of course, my son just retired.
Oh.
And I think you probably taught him over at North at one time. You started out teaching high school, right?
Yes, I did. I got my degree. I have both a bachelor's and a master's degree in education with mathematics. And so I taught at North High School. I taught math at North High School. I also have a physical education degree, and so I love coaching. So at North, I had the opportunity. I student taught in physical education, and was given the opportunity then to coach girls volleyball, basketball, and softball. So I coached those three sports and taught math at North for 8 years prior to getting on the fire service.
I hate to be sexist about this, but traditionally, when I was growing up, girls don't do well in math. But, you know, my daughter was a whiz, and it sounds like you were a whiz in math, too. So that was just a stereotype, I guess.
Yeah, huh? Yeah. I love math.
Okay. I frankly don't like it very much. You would have had a time with me, especially.
Well, you have other skills that I hope.
Now, you're the first female fire chief for Wichita. What does that mean to anything to you, as special or?
Not really. I mean, I think the public, it's more important to the public than it is to me. But one of the things it does provide me is an opportunity to be a role model for other females, and an opportunity, and not just in the fire service, which I really like all young ladies to become firefighters, but to to me, it's an opportunity. I've displayed that if you have a dream and you work hard towards it, that you can accomplish anything that you want.
There you go. And how many female firefighters do we have right now?
We currently have 8, but that includes me.
Okay, you and 7 more.
All yes, right. That's correct.
Now, a group called Neighborhood Alliance is promoting a 0.25% sales tax increase to Wichita to pay for more firefighters and police officers. I know the mayor said, no, we're going to take care of that. Do you need more people, though, Chief?
You know what, Steve? We never have enough people. We're like any other business. If we can get more, we'd love to have more.
How many firefighters do we have right now in Wichita?
We currently employ 453, but that counts commissioned and also our civilian staff, which on our civilian staff, 20 of those. So 433 are commissioned firefighters, and then 20 personnel, we are civilian staff.
How many fire stations and vehicles in your department? I know it's a big number, of responsibility.
Yes, we have 22 fire stations, and that's including the one fire station which we co-locate with out at Station 638, which is at 143rd and Central. And inside those 22 fire stations, we have 22 fire engines, what we call our pumper apparatus.
Yeah.
We have 4 trucks, which our trucks are the ones with the big ladders on that people see rolling down the street. They're also the ones that provide the most safety for our firefighters. And then we have 14 squads. Squads look like the pickup trucks with the little pump on the back of it. And then we have what we call 4 specialty vehicles. We have a hazardous materials vehicle. We have a technical rescue vehicle. We have a tender, which is basically it contains water on the inside of it, and we bring it to areas that we have lacking in water supply from hydrants. And then we have a rehab vehicle, which is for our own internal personnel. We respond it to significant incidents so that we can, once our firefighters are done working, we can bring them out and we can take a look at make sure that their vitals are stable and that they're doing okay physically before we put them back to work again.
Now, I don't know if most folks understand this or not, but when there's, do you not send a rescue squad with every ambulance call?
We send a squad.
A squad.
Yeah. The reason I correct you on that instead of just calling it a rescue squad is because there's all kinds of terminology throughout the fire service as far as rescues. You know, when you take a look at rescues in other jurisdictions, you're looking at what we refer to as our technical rescue unit, which is a relatively large piece of equipment. And it's basically it's a gigantic toolbox. It has every tool that you could imagine, you know, because they're going to address water type issues. They're going to address confined space type issues. You know, when we have grain elevator issues, anything of those kinds of magnitudes, the specialty issues, they're the ones that are actually going to be the ones that respond. So, yes, we respond a squad with on ambulance calls, and sometimes we respond an engine depending on what type of call it is. If it is a near death or a very serious injury, emergency incident, then we may send 2 units.
I don't know if you mentioned how many boats you have or not.
We have, let's see, I think we have a repertoire of boats.
A fleet?
And what I mean by that, we go from a jet ski all the way up to, we don't have, we have different types of boats with different kinds of motors depending on the type of water.
Yeah,
it says
you've got to be flexible for anything, huh?
Right, whether it's swift water, if we're working near a dam, all different types of water.
I want to back up for just a second because the thought occurred to me. When you became a firefighter, what year was that again?
1988.
1988. I presume that there were some, as far as, housing in the fire department, in the station, did they have to make a special accommodation for you there someplace?
Yeah. At the time, there wasn't, not every station had facilities for women.
Okay.
And so there was only certain stations that women could be assigned to. Mm-hmm. And then through the years, we've evolved. And now we have facilities for all women at every single one of our stations.
What was it like the first time you went on a real good Code 3 fire?
What was it like? I was scared.
Yeah, I was going to say, you were scared, obviously.
But what about the adrenaline? Adrenaline kicks in, and then you're, you know, and that's a nice thing about being a firefighter because you work in teams. Especially when you're real young, everybody wants it. You're kind of like the little baby, you know, everybody wants to take care of you. So they put you underneath your wing and they provide you with a lot of really good mentorship, and they kind of get behind you and you kind of push you in there. But at the time, you know, it's like, you know, people often ask me a lot of times, well, how can you do that? How can you make that horrific call and be okay? And, you know, because if I saw that, that would just gross me out, or that would just pull at my heartstrings. You know, the thing about it is that when those tones go off and you're summoned to go help somebody, you become very focused on your mission, and that is providing the very best possible care you can. And so going through your mind are things, you know, you're trying to dot your I's and cross your T's to make sure that you've got everything. Okay, if this is happening, this is what I'm going to do. And as you're involved in the incident, you're not thinking about things that you're focused on doing what you need to do to make this situation better for that particular person.
The training kicks in, doesn't it?
Correct. Yes, it does.
And but then later?
Well, yeah, and oftentimes, and that's a nice thing about firefighters, is that once the incident is over, you'll see them sometimes stand out in the yard. And sometimes, you know, after we mitigate a fire, the reason we're standing out in the yard is we have to let some of the smoke get out of there, and then we call for investigators. And before we can go in and finish cleaning up, we got to let the investigator go in and figure out the cause. Mm-hmm. And so you'll see us standing around the front yard, but it's not because we're not doing anything. We're just waiting for the investigator to complete their portion of the work, and then we'll go back in and we'll mop up and get things the best we possibly can so that the occupant can then return.
But I think what I was driving at is that sometimes you do see some pretty ugly things. And sure, later you may have some feelings or some thoughts on that.
Right, exactly.
Do you have help for your people?
Yes, we do.
Well, I mean, if somebody really comes through a traumatic situation.
Yeah, we have a peer support team, and it is, and what I was getting to, standing around the front yard is always good, too, because we just can, we stand and we talk about the incident a lot of times. You'll hear us, you know, the ways that we get to bounce things off of other people that are there, you know, that have been there, done those kinds of things. But on top of that, yes, we do have a group that we've put together, and they've went through training. It is called the Peer Support Team, and it is available 24/7, 365. And oftentimes we continue to evolve in that program. You know, in the beginning, we used to always reach out to everybody. Now we find the research is saying that, hey, wait a shift before you reach out to them. Then sometimes it's just mainly make a call and see how they're doing. You know, have you been sleeping? Anything going on at home? Because oftentimes if people are internalizing trauma and things that they've seen, and they're having a hard time struggling with the incident, they'll stop sleeping. Mm-hmm. They'll turn to alcohol. They'll fight with their family members and those kinds of things. So the peer support groups just kind of like they call that particular call on the individuals that made that gruesome or event, and just kind of talk to them. And then if we need to pursue it further, there's some formalization to it.
You know, we're seeing a national local trend, and it's not just in firefighting or police officers, or it's everywhere. A shortage of workers. Is that impacting the fire department?
We still get, when I first got on the department, there was like 400 people, applicants for the position.
Wow.
The difference between now and then is now it's like everything else. The standards continue to, the bars continue to be set higher. For example, we still have, we just hired a class of 10. We had over 200 applicants that we actually went through. But we now there's all kinds of testing besides just taking what we call the CPAT test, which is a physical agility test. They have to take a written test, and then they also take a behavioral test to try to ensure that the person that might be a possible candidate is in alignment with what has the mental capacity to do the job.
Sure.
So when we actually then start to actually interview, we narrow those candidate numbers down from, you know, the 200 number down to something that's a little bit more manageable, usually around the 40 range. So we usually only, on an average, whether we're hiring a class of 10 or we're hiring a class of 15, and 15 is usually our maximum, just because of staffing capabilities and being able to provide the student instructor ratio that we need. But usually about 40 people is who we interview.
It would seem to me that that's being a firefighter is something there's always a certain percentage that want to do that. And yeah. You're going to have a pool there. You're listening to Issues 2018 on the Intercom radio stations, and our guest is Wichita Fire Chief Tammy Snow. And now we're going to get to the thing that we want to talk about, and that is the city council recently passing that new fireworks ordinance that seems to be pretty much the same as the one we had before. But the change seems to me to put more responsibility on your department to be enforcers of the law. You want to tell us about the new fireworks ordinance?
Well, yeah, you know, fireworks comes underneath the fire code, you know. So ultimately, yeah, it does fall on the Wichita Fire Department. But what this new ordinance does for us is provide us with an element of enforcement, but it also provides an accountability element to the actual occupant or the person actually using fireworks. The ordinance itself remains the same, meaning that in the city of Wichita, no sky lanterns, no bottle rockets, and nothing that goes higher than 6 feet in any direction. And that's our current ordinance. The portion that has changed is the enforcement part. On July 3rd and on July 4th, there will be enforcement by the Wichita Fire Department and also teamed up with the law enforcement officer. And we will patrol areas from 8 o'clock at night till 2 in the morning. And we'll actually write fireworks violation tickets. Now, in the past, the ordinance was written to the point that we had to actually see that person. Person had to have possession of it. We had to see them using it, and they had to have possession of it, and then we could confiscate it, and they would then go to court and go in front of a judge, and they could be fined anywhere up to $2,500. That has changed. Now, all we have to have is verification that somebody on that property is using illegal fireworks. So we don't have to actually see you use it. It just has to be on that property. And then what happens is whoever is the occupant or the property owner of that particular piece of property will receive a $250 ticket on July 3rd and July 4th. While we are, you know, we're dedicating special teams then for enforcement. The other portion of it is never in the past have we been able to hold adolescents responsible. Now, an adult will be responsible for their child if they are illegally using illegal fireworks. Now, the actual sales dates will mirror up with the state law, which is June 27th through July 5th. So if at any time we're out and about, and somebody is violating the current ordinance, then yes, we can write them a $250 ticket. And that was the other thing that's changed. It's just a standard penalty of $250 instead of giving the judge the leeway of anything up to $2,500.
I'll tell you, I can remember times back in the 70s when the bottle rockets were flying and firefighters, it seemed like there was a call every 4 minutes. I mean, it was nasty. And right. That's why they went to this a little bit stricter code, I guess.
Right.
But man.
And it's not perfect. I'm sure that we'll be doing some tweaking after this. And in fact, that is part of the current plan is as soon as July 4th is over and we have opportunity to gather the data, we'll go back in front of council and present our findings to see what needs to be tweaked and how we can better improve it to make it a safer community for all the citizens.
All right. I want to ask you some I'm going to switch gears a little bit.
Okay.
And it's not nice to talk about, but it is a fact. How many people actually died in fires in Wichita last year?
Last year or this year? So far, we have four.
Four this year.
Yeah. Okay. We are, you know, right now at being at four, and we're only into the month of May. Between four and five is the actual national average. So we're already, and each year we exceed the national average in fire fatalities.
What are the most frequent causes of those fatal fires?
Is there one
that stands out?
Well, they're kind of dependent. Well, I can tell you the causes of fires, and sometimes they result in a fire fatality. The primary cause for fires is unattended cooking. That's our number one cause. Followed real close behind that is cigarettes, but it's smoking. It's the improper discarding of smoking material. Especially, people for some reason think that they can take a cigarette butt and put it out on a wood deck, and then they put it between the two pieces of wood, and hours later we come back and, you know, they go to bed, or it's in the middle of the night, hours later we come back, and depending on the wind in Kansas, we have fire going up the side of a house into an attic. It's an apartment complex majority of the time.
Yeah.
And so displaced or improperly discarded smoking materials, it follows real close behind cooking fires.
Are homes required by law to have smoke detectors?
By law that, well, you should. We can't tell you.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're not required, but it's a pretty good idea.
Yeah, and we have a, you know, we have a smoke alarm program where we'll actually, no matter what your economic level is, we will actually come out and put one in. That's how important they are to us.
Yeah.
Red Cross just recently had a weekend where they spent, some of their volunteers went out and put smoke alarms in people's houses. But if you don't have one, we want you to have one. Call down to our main office, which they can call at 316-268-4510. 316-268-4510. Give them their name, get on the list, and we'll get out and put a smoke alarm. No questions asked.
Okay, let's talk about your investigators a little bit. I'm sure there's special training on that, but talk about your team of investigators going in to try to find the cause on these fires.
And to be an arson investigator or a fire investigator, yeah, they take significant amount of training. So they are commissioned law enforcement, and then on top of that, they do the fire training. On top of that, they have training for arson. We are very fortunate in that the city of Wichita also has what we call an arson dog, which is utilized throughout the, utilized throughout the state, but specifically down in the south central part of Kansas. Our dog is utilized, you know, in a lot of our surrounding communities to help them solve arson fires, fires that are intentionally set.
Gosh.
But yeah, they.
How would you train a dog to do that?
Well, it's pretty significant.
Yeah,
yeah, they go and they have to each year be recertified.
Yeah.
So yeah, we go out to the East Coast or the West Coast and part of the ATF program, and you have to. It's a big process because we have to make an application, we have to be approved for it, and then we send a person because that dog will only. Is married up to a person, and that person spends 8 weeks of their time going out training the dog, specific training that they go to. And then, like I said, every year they have to go back for recertification.
Will the department have an enhanced presence during Wichita River Festival?
Not an enhanced presence, just our normal presence. There's not anything...
Not anything special, just have people there.
No, we go around and we inspect all the food trucks. We make sure that the fireworks that they have planned are in safe locations. And we'll do standbys during the fireworks displays and so forth. But nothing unique. I mean, nothing any different than our normal years.
I missed this opportunity, but did... what's the response time on your fires? I didn't bring that up.
We try to meet, we have a performance measure of 4 minutes. First unit's on scene by 4 minutes. And our second unit is on scene no later than 8 minutes. So we try to get there within 4 minutes from the time in which the call's been dispatched out.
It sounds pretty quick. I know the persons who's waiting for you, they think it's too long, right?
Yeah, but that's the reason why we have 22 fire stations, and that's the reason why they're strategically located. We spend a significant amount of time gathering data, and all of our fire stations are primarily in areas in which we can, it's called primary response area, where they can respond to out to the community within 4 minutes.
Anything new and exciting on your planning board? I mean, you're a civil servant. I don't know that they encourage you to dream or not. But anything
you
plan?
Yeah, we're like everybody else. Yeah, there's, we always are looking for opportunities where we can better serve the community. We have numerous, and we want to move our fire service into the 21st century. So there's technology out there that we can utilize that would enhance a lot of different things, you know, whether it be give us routes. You know, right now, a route, we still study streets and take street tests, which is clear back in the, paper pencil days. And now people have GPS on their iPhones.
That big ladder truck ought to have a GPS on it.
Yeah. So, there's things like that. There's ways in which we actually do our business called Incident Command, where people...
I'm going to have to cut you off. I'll talk about that another time.
Okay.
But thanks for your time this morning. I really appreciate it. And you're doing a good job, we think. Our guest, Wichita Fire Chief Tammy Snow. And that's all for this edition of Issues 2018. We'll be back next week. Thank you for listening. I'm Steve McIntosh.
At MLBShop.com, you can get all the latest officially licensed merchandise for you and your family. But if you really want to level up your game... you can grab something for your dog walker, your Pilates instructor, your swim coach, your neighbor, your accountant, your gardener, your best friend, your bandmate, your boss, your kid's teacher, your mailman. Visit MLBShop.com and stock up on officially licensed on-field merchandise from your favorite teams.
Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton, the real-life murder that inspired Twin Peaks. These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.